This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The beginning of an invasion. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Wednesday, February 23rd. Glad you could be with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Biden has announced sanctions against Russian banks after the latest moves by Moscow, which he calls the beginning of an invasion of Ukraine.
Rattled in part by the events in Eastern Europe, investors sent stocks lower again. The S&P 500 entered correction territory.
A trucker convoy heads from Pennsylvania to D.C. today protesting vaccine mandates. A separate convoy is preparing to leave California.
And how bankruptcy very rarely gets rid of your student debt.
250,000 people a year before the pandemic were filing for bankruptcy, including student loans. And then out of those folks, only about 300 were able to wipe out their loans every year. So it's only like a 1 in 1,000 chance that you have going through bankruptcy court to wipe out those student loans.
Bart Jansen at USA Today says even when bankruptcy erases student debt, the government might still come after you. The U.S. and her European allies are leveling sanctions against Russia for what President Biden referred to as the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Among them, the blacklisting of two major banks and Germany stopping the Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline to Russia. It's not the package of sanctions at the ready if there were a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, but it's designed to limit Russia's access to the global financial system.
We still believe that Russia is poised to go much further in launching a massive military attack against Ukraine. Hope I'm wrong about that. Hope we're wrong about that. But Russia has only escalated its threat against the rest of Ukrainian territory.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has amassed more than 150,000 troops near Ukraine's borders, unhappy about Kiev's goal of joining NATO. He's ordered soldiers into two breakaway regions to, as he says, keep the peace. Japan, Canada, and Australia are also imposing sanctions. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken canceled a meeting set for tomorrow with his Russian counterpart. More than three dozen lawmakers on Capitol Hill are reminding President Biden that he must seek authorization from Congress before sending in troops or launching military attacks. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
In a letter to the White House signed by 43 members of Congress, the bipartisan group acknowledged that Mr. Biden previously said he would not send troops into Ukraine, but noted the decision could change. Among the political opposites who signed the letter, Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz and Minnesota Democrat Ilhan Omar. The president has so far resisted sending troops into Ukraine, announcing he was moving soldiers into other NATO countries, including Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Lawmakers wrote that the War Powers Resolution of 1973 has been abused by previous presidents, but they noted that the act restricted Mr. Biden from not only engaging troops in battle, but also launching a preemptive strike. The world's attention is on eastern Ukraine, where Moscow's forces are gathered, yet Russian President Vladimir Putin's ambitions extend far beyond. Whatever follows Russia's large-scale military maneuvers and other recent moves, Mr. Putin has made clear he wants to redraw the post-Cold War security map of Europe by renegotiating the end of the Cold War. So says Stephen Fidler, bureau chief at large for the Wall Street Journal. He joins us from London. Stephen, explain.
Yeah, I looked at what happened in the 1990s around the time of the reunification of Germany in 1990. And also in 1997, in the prelude to the expansion of NATO towards the east, towards the countries that were part of the Soviet bloc and either a part of the Soviet Union or in the Warsaw Pact. And what the Russians and Putin often says is that at this time, in these two periods, the Russians were given repeated promises that NATO and the West wouldn't expand to beyond their current borders. So in other words, to the countries of Eastern and Central Europe. And they say those promises, and Putin repeats this, that those promises were broken. I mean, it sort of sounds to many people probably a bit like ancient history.
Yeah.
But for Putin, it is very personal. And in many ways, is seeking to sort of turn the clock back and push back the boundaries of NATO more or less to where they were in 1997 before the first big eastward enlargement.
What is if he were to do that, as you said, kind of create this buffer around Russia, what does that do for him?
Well, it sort of, I mean, one thing it does is give him at home, you know, a significant advantage. I mean, it would be very popular with Russians. I mean, he may genuinely feel, who knows, he may genuinely feel threatened by NATO's enlargement, although in fairness, the Western allies have only put in a few thousand troops into Western Europe. So it is a kind of, you know, a slight wonder about why he feels so concerned about that. And they've only done that in response to his previous moves on Georgia and Ukraine.
Okay.
And what he's probably, you know, probably we may see happening in the next a few weeks, and who knows, you know, further encroachments of the Russians into Ukraine, further sort of agreements with the Belarusians, who are, you know, his neighbors and essentially sort of his client state, that sort of formally allows the Russians to kind of move their defensive perimeter out towards through Ukraine and through Belarus.
We're speaking with Stephen Fidler, bureau chief at large for the Wall Street Journal in London. His story is about Russian President Vladimir Putin wanting to expand his sphere and redraw the post-Cold War map. Why now?
I think that's a very good question, and I don't... we can only speculate, to be honest. I think there are several things that have come together. One is that he perceives the West as weak. So I think he's had questions about President Biden. I think he looks at where Europe is. We've got a new government in Germany, a social democratic government that's been traditionally more favored the Russians, or at least a social democratic chancellor. We've got an election coming up in France. We've got the UK in disarray, really, and sort of falling out with its neighbours over Brexit. So I think he sort of perceived a divided West. He's also doing it at a time when, you know, there's heavy European dependence on gas supplies from Russia. And furthermore, having spoken to President Xi in Beijing at the time of the opening of the Winter Games, he may think he has, he may feel he has a red light from the Chinese to go ahead and do this. Whether in fact he has that is another question. So I think those are some of the factors anyway that has made him sense that there's an opportunity here. The other thing is that public opinion in Ukraine seems to have turned against Russia quite considerably since 2014. And, you know, that was the time when the Russians annexed Crimea and set up these separatist kind of pro-Russian statelets in the east of Ukraine. Since then, there's been a significant fall off of support for Russia in Ukraine and even among Russian speakers of that country. So he may feel the tide was moving against him in that sense, too.
Thanks, Stephen. Stephen Fidler, bureau chief at large for the Wall Street Journal in London.
Dell Technologies President's Day business sale has arrived. For a limited time, save up to 45% on all our latest gear to work from anywhere with fast, free shipping. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business, so now's the time for incredible savings on PCs, along with servers, monitors, and docks, all with free shipping and quick installation and setup through Dell Installation Services. Get started by shopping online or by contacting your Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly as well on Twitter. Twitter, at Gordon Deal. The S&P 500 has entered correction territory, meaning it's down at least 10% from a recent high. That high was January 3rd. Investors are skittish about tensions in Eastern Europe. All three major stock market indexes were off by more than 1% each yesterday, hitting their lowest level in more than 4 months. As investors consider the fallout of Russia's deployment of soldiers into Ukraine's eastern Donbas region and sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. Art Hogan is chief market strategist at National Securities.
We don't know how broad this Russian invasion of Ukraine may get. So the market tends to price in worst case scenario. And then once the cannons start to fire, you tend to find that buying opportunity. The market tends to rally back and shift its focus back on the fundamentals.
Investors were already concerned with supply chain disruptions, rapidly rising inflation, and plans by the Fed to raise interest rates to cool that inflation. The S&P 500 declined 44 points, marking its first correction since the start of the pandemic in February of 2020. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The White House says President Biden will no longer hold a summit with Russian President Putin, as had been suggested over the weekend. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken will not meet with his counterpart in Geneva tomorrow. This, as Putin today said, Moscow is always open to diplomacy, but added that Russia's interests and the security of its citizens are unconditional. Countries all over the world, including the U.S., continue to impose sanctions on Russia. President Biden is clamping down on Russia's financing.
We have no intention of fighting Russia. We want to send an unmistakable message, though, that the United States, together with our allies, will defend every inch of NATO territory.
Homeland Security says it has no evidence to suggest the U.S. faces an imminent cyber attack threat from the Kremlin.
Number two.
Cities from Dallas to Chicago to Boston are feeling the impacts of multiple winter storms and cold fronts. A blast of Arctic air in the west and into the northern plains is also expected to be the longest duration cold outbreak of the winter season so far. Storm systems are producing snow and wind across the upper Midwest, and severe thunderstorms and flooding are hitting Mississippi, Ohio, and Tennessee.
Number three.
A federal jury in Georgia has found the three men convicted of killing Ahmaud Arbery guilty of hate crimes and other charges. The jury found father and son Greg and Travis McMichael and their neighbor William Bryan guilty of all the federal charges they individually faced, Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Every case is decided on its own merits. We've done a number of hate crimes prosecutions already in the last 2 years, and we will continue to bring those cases where we have the facts and the law on our side.
The three had already been convicted of murder and given life sentences in the state trial. A fossil of a 170-million-year-old pterosaur, described as the world's best-preserved skeleton of the prehistoric winged reptile, has been found on the Isle of Skye in Scotland. The National Museum of Scotland says the fossil is the largest of its kind ever discovered from the Jurassic period. The reptile had an estimated wingspan of more than 8 feet. Pterosaurs were the first vertebrates to fly some 50 million years before birds.
Man, 8 feet.
Eek. Get out of the way.
You're out for a walk with your dog in the park. Bye-bye, puppy. Thanks, Jen. So I got to say, 2022 kind of feels like Groundhog Day. Wake up, read a headline about inflation, repeat, right? Inflation on the rise at the fastest pace in 40 years. But you don't need to check the price of organic eggs to know it's probably not the best time to put all your investment eggs in one basket. I'm talking about diversifying your portfolio. And thanks to today's sponsor, Masterworks, you can now add an exciting asset class to your portfolio, blue chip artwork. Masterworks is the new investing platform that lets everyone invest in contemporary art from icons like Picasso, Monet, and Warhol. In fact, early investors already have seen over 30% net annualized IRR in 2020 and 2021 from the sale of two paintings. No wonder the Wall Street Journal recently called the art market among the hottest markets on earth. Our listeners can join over 300,000 members and access their latest offerings at masterworks.art/Gordon. That's masterworks.art/Gordon. See important disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer.
Thanks for being with us. More Americans are feeling the effect of the single tax, in which singles are penalized in an economy shaped by post-World War II values of marriage and family. Since then, times have changed. Millennials are postponing home buying, marriage, and childbearing until later or never. Hillary Hofauer reporter at Insider, has a look at a study by the Institute for Family Studies. Hillary, what did you find?
Part of that new normal is that being single has become more socially acceptable. But the economic system that incentivizes marriage has not shifted as along with the stigma that has shifted. And, you know, these costs of being single are showing up everywhere in our tax code to our social life. And so on top of that, peer research shows that singles also earn less on average than their partnered counterparts. That's even more so for women who already earn less than men, and even more so for Black and Hispanic women who earn the least.
What would being single have to do with how much you might earn?
That's a great question. I am not entirely sure why there is a split between this. I spoke with a professor of economics at Harvard, Claudia Golden, and she said that research has shown that marriage is a clear cause of higher earnings for men because they tend to marry when they are performing or doing better in life. But as far as women, there isn't as much known about the causal effects of marriage or partnering when it comes to salaries. So that aspect of it is a little unclear in the research.
Well, we're speaking with Hillary Hofauer. She is a correspondent for Millennial Wealth at Insider. Her story is called Single Women Are Losing in Today's Economy. So some of these observers, Hillary, they would like to see what changed.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's part of the problem in why this is continuing to, you know, kind of cause a divide between single and partnered people is that change for this is complicated. I think that it would have to start with the tax code, which is, you know, kind of, it favors the married, and it kind of creates this ripple effect throughout the economy. You know, you start with a tax code that favors the married, and then you go down into companies who kind of follow suit by offering, you know, services like gym memberships and cell phone plans at deals for families. So I think starting at the top with maybe, you know, more deductions. I don't want to get too involved into taxes because that's a little out of my wheelhouse. But if you start at the top, then we might be able to see more ripple effects throughout other areas of the economy.
Thanks, Hillary. Hillary Hofauer, reporter at Insider. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If saving money is one of your top goals for 2022, then stop paying insane amounts of money every month for wireless. Switch to Mint Mobile. It's the easiest way to save this year. Since Mint Mobile is the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, they let you maximize your savings with plans starting at just $15 a month. At Mint Mobile, all plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Choose the amount of monthly data that's right for you and stop paying for data you never use. They've eliminated the traditional costs of retail and you get the savings. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, visit mintmobile.com/Gordon. That's mintmobile.com/Gordon. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Gordon.
We are America's First News. This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, February 23. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Biden announces financial sanctions on Russian banks. S&P 500 enters correction territory. Home prices grew nearly 19% last year. The Texas Attorney General says it's child abuse if parents approve medical procedures for changing genders for underage kids. At least two trucker convoys leave today, headed for Washington to protest things like vaccine mandates. Snow and ice for the central U.S., spring-like temps for the East Coast, and the effort by a coffee shop worker to protect a teenager. That story in about 20 minutes. About 250,000 people with student loans declare bankruptcy each year, but only about 1 in 1,000 are able to wipe out education debt. Despite President Biden's campaign vow to ease the burden on people who owe student loans, federal lawyers across the U.S. continue to challenge bankruptcy rulings for some of the most desperate borrowers. Here's what's happening from Bart Jansen, reporter at USA Today. Bart, what did you find?
Yeah, it's a huge problem and something that threatens to get even worse once the moratorium on payments ends that's been held during the pandemic. As people have to start paying off their loans again, people are worried that it could get much worse very soon. But professor at the University of Utah, Jason Giuliano, has done some studies of the bankruptcy filings in federal court and found something like 250,000 people a year before the pandemic were filing for bankruptcy, including student loans. And then out of those folks, only about 300 were able to wipe out their loans every year. So it's only like a 1 in 1,000 chance that you have going through bankruptcy court to wipe out those student loans, because they add an extra hurdle that you have to clear legally.
And then in some cases, the government may come after you anyway.
That's right. Even among those 300, at that point, many of the cases get settled. But among the ones that sort of survive, the federal government will occasionally appeal those decisions from bankruptcy court to U.S. district court and try again just to overturn these decisions where, you know, first they've gone through bankruptcy to wipe out, you know, credit card debt, medical debt, that sorts of thing, all these other sorts of unsecured loans. They have to cross a second hurdle to wipe out the student loan debt through a process called undue hardship. They have to prove it's, you know, even worse than the other debt. And then even then, the federal government will appeal to try to prevent a bad precedent, to prevent, you know, more people from being able to wipe out their debts this way.
Wow. Explain the anecdote, the young man you opened the story with, Ryan Wolfson, the Penn State grad.
Yeah, the way that we got onto this story was we noticed that this man, Ryan Wolfson, he's 35. He racked up something near $100,000 in loans getting his bachelor's degree at Penn State in 2010. He had a great deal of difficulty over the last decade finding a job. He just couldn't find anything in his field. And so he's worked minimum wage jobs. He wound up being a rideshare driver. He happens to be epileptic, and so he wrecked his car, and that prevented him from even doing the rideshare stuff. He is able to declare bankruptcy. He wipes out most of his debts. He goes the extra step to prove that he can't pay the student loans. He wins that case on January 14th, and the Department of Education through the Justice Department, files an appeal on January 28th saying, no, we don't want to let that decision stand, and so we're going to continue fighting this case. Then they come back quickly and drop the case on February 4th. They won't say why they made that reversal, but just the way that they pursued the case, and they pursue other cases this way, is what frightens student borrower advocates, and it's why a whole lot of people, law professors and bankruptcy advocates, say that the system needs to be reformed.
Mm. We're speaking with Bart Jansen, Justice Department reporter at USA Today. He's got a really good story running that's called Bankruptcy Very Rarely Erases Student Loans. Even when it does, the U.S. government has put up a fight. So I guess how bad could the debt problem get once the payment moratorium ends?
Well, it's hard to gauge how much. Well, there are something like 43 million people with student loans of something like a total of $1.5 trillion. So there's a lot of student debt out there. The loans continue to go out, and people continue to rack up the debt because people continue going to school. So the question is, you know, how much of that might turn into bad debt? You know, I do not have predictions on that, but the problem is that as if the economy sours, if unemployment goes up, you may only have an increase in the rate of these student loan borrowers defaulting, and you know, that the numbers would only get higher.
Thanks, Bart. Bart Jansen, Justice Department reporter at USA Today.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that football players are some of the largest humans around, but with all of them standing next to each other on TV, it's sometimes hard to get the proper perspective. Leave that to J.J. Watt, who had people on social media laughing about how massive his hands must be compared to the rest of us. Watt, who's listed at 6'5", 288 pounds, and at one time consumed up to 9,000 calories a day, posted a picture on Twitter of his hand holding a can of Gatorade. And while this pic was meant to promote Watt's association with the drink brand, what it mostly did was make people notice how huge Watt's hand was in relation to the can. Some speculated that there was no way it could be a regular size can, as it looked tiny in Watt's giant palm. One user joked that it looked like Watt could legitimately hold a 12-pack or more in each of his hands, and others posted pictures of their hands holding cans in which the cans took up significantly more real estate. And to put the debate to rest, I can confirm that the can is regulation size after zooming in to see the label, which reads 11.5 fluid ounces.
Oh, so not 12.
Well, it's, yeah, so it's not 12. So perhaps it's slightly smaller, but also the can itself could be taking up more space. Maybe there's less room for liquid. I don't know. But it's not one of those. I guess they have the smaller ones of what, maybe 8 ounces, something like that.
Yeah.
You see those around sometimes, and I guess it's not one of those.
Okay.
That we know for sure.
Yeah, boy, I'm looking at the picture. It's like it barely covers like the, you know, the palm of his hand. It's like he could throw it like a little stone across a lake or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, really, he could have put two or three at least in his hand with no exaggeration, and maybe even done a better job of promoting Gatorade if you really wanted to.
It's very funny.
And we know the similarities between the U.S. and U.K., but sometimes we go our separate ways when it comes to food, and this would seem to be one of those times. A British sauce expert named Felicity Cloak, who has actually written books on sauces, recently made waves in her home country when she suggested that a bacon sandwich should be topped with marmalade instead of ketchup. She said that to get the British staple just right, you have to slather marmalade over the cooked bacon before you serve it. But her suggestion has left Twitter users divided, with some calling it an abomination and others saying it sounded delicious. Cloak defended her stance to The Guardian, saying that if you think about it, ham is often glazed with honey, so the sweet sauce with the salty bacon does make some sense.
Yeah, I'd be willing to try that. I can see that.
I've never had marmalade before. In fact, I had to look it up. I know it was something that you've heard about in like Winnie the Pooh cartoons and stuff. I didn't know exactly what marmalade was. I guess it's citrus-based, right?
Yeah,
it's
like jelly.
Yeah, yeah. So I've never had that before. But I guess I'd be willing to try it again. Maybe if, you know, as we say oftentimes, maybe if like someone else was buying it, you know. But I don't know if I'd order it. I don't know if I'd go into my local, you know, deli here and order that, a bacon sandwich with marmalade on it.
You never had marmalade on toast, for example?
I don't know if I have, for whatever reason. Somehow I missed that one.
By the way, just for the record, marmalade on bacon, I believe, is the most unique flavor pairing that's ever come out of England or the UK, right? Which is known for very bland foods.
Right.
So they're to be applauded for coming up with something like this, marmalade and bacon.
That's actually kind of spicing things up for them a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is really out of the box for the UK. Thanks, Mike.
Dell Technologies President's Day business sale has arrived. For a limited time, save up to 45% on all our latest gear to work from anywhere with fast, free shipping. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business, so now's the time for incredible savings on PCs, along with servers, monitors, and docks, all with free shipping and quick installation and setup through Dell Installation Services. Get started by shopping online or by contacting your Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. With a nod toward February as American Heart Month, Fox News spoke with experts to compile a list of the worst foods for your ticker. Number one, processed meats. These include sausage, pepperoni, bacon, hot dogs, and deli meats because they contain significant amounts of salt, preservatives, and saturated fats. Number two, fried foods. French fries, fried chicken, fried dumplings, you name it. If it's fried, you should avoid it, or at least consider fried foods a rare treat. They're high in calories and undesirable forms of fat, including saturated and trans fats. Number three, sugar-sweetened beverages like juice and soda. You know this. A study found that consumption of one or more sugar-sweetened beverages per day was associated with an increased risk of cardiac disease and stroke. Number four, red meat. In a recent study, red meats, both processed and unprocessed, were associated with a higher incidence of cardiac disease. Number five, sweets plus refined grains like white bread and pasta are associated with a higher risk of heart disease. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The East-West face-off over Ukraine is escalating dramatically, with Russian lawmakers authorizing President Putin to use military force outside his country, and President Biden and European leaders responding by slapping sanctions on Russian oligarchs and banks. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
These measures will freeze their assets in the United States, prohibit American individuals or businesses from doing any transactions with them, shut them out of the global financial system, and foreclose access to the U.S. dollar.
Putin has yet to unleash the force of the 150,000 troops massed on three sides of Ukraine. Biden held back on even tougher sanctions that could cause economic turmoil for Russia.
Number two.
The Pentagon has approved the deployment of 700 unarmed National Guard troops to the nation's capital as it prepares for trucker convoys that are planning protests against pandemic restrictions beginning next week. D.C. Police Chief Robert Conte.
We're going to plan as best we can, work with our partners, both local and federal, to do whatever we can to mitigate it.
The troops would be used to assist with traffic control during demonstrations expected in the city in the coming days.
Number three.
The Supreme Court has agreed to hear a Christian website designer's appeal challenging a Colorado law that bars businesses from refusing to serve customers based on their sexual orientation. The court says it will hear arguments about whether a law to compel an artist to speak or stay silent violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment. The Colorado law has been upheld by two lower courts. U.S. women's soccer stars have reached a $24 million settlement with the U.S. Soccer Federation following a lawsuit over unequal pay with men's team players. The landmark settlement was announced yesterday, years after five U.S. women's national team players filed an Equal Employment Opportunity Commission complaint over inequality in pay and treatment. Team member Alex Morgan on ABC.
This is just such a monumental step forward in feeling valued, feeling respected, and just mending our relationship with U.S. Soccer.
According to terms of the settlement, U.S. Soccer will pay men's and women at an equal rate in the future in all friendlies and tournaments, including the World Cup.
Jen, how would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? Geico can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save. Glad you're with us. A Starbucks barista in Texas feared that a teenager might have been in danger and came to her rescue by writing a message on a cup. The girl's mother praised the employee for stepping in when her 18-year-old daughter was approached by a man she didn't know while studying by herself at a Corpus Christi Starbucks location. Mom Brandy Roberson told the New York Post that the man was very loud and animated. A female barista came over and handed the high school senior a paper coffee cup, telling her it was, quote, an extra hot chocolate someone forgot to pick up. But on the cup, the employee had written a message that said, "Are you okay? Do you want us to intervene? If you do, take the lid off the cup." The baristas were staring at her, ready to step in, but the teenager did not need the employees to intervene and let the staff know she was okay. The mother said she hopes other businesses train their staff to do the same and says the efforts by the baristas reaffirm her faith in humanity. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.